curator of the Lincoln Collection at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield. P.M. Zoll, Professor Emeritus of American Studies at California State University, and now a research scholar at the Huntington Library in San Marino, California. And a noted Lincoln impersonator, Richard Fritz Klein of Springfield. James Cornelius, as can be expected in his job as curator of the Lincoln Collection, is immersed in Lincoln.
He was of a temperament that always saw humor in things. He always saw a lighter side to things, even when he couldn't express it, perhaps, I think, during the Civil War's darkest moments. I'm not one who thinks that depression really afflicted him too much. I think that melancholy is the better word for it in the way that we understand it now. And that's got various sources in him, as it does in anybody, really. His times were much harder as a president than nearly anybody else's, of course. He had an insight into human nature and the sort of the irony of his own position. He was always aware that he'd come from very humble beginnings and got to the most important job in the land. That, in its own way, was humorous to him.
Aside from Lincoln's service as president, 16th president, and then, you know, his days that we all know about here in Springfield as a rail splitter and a surveyor and a storekeeper during his youth at New Salem up near Petersburg, of course, Lincoln is also known for the Lincoln-Douglas debates. I think there were a total of seven of them. Have you encountered any Lincoln use of humor in those debates with Stephen Douglas?
Yes, and he was good at that, and he had to do it. The debate's format wasn't anything most people today would want to stomach. The first speaker went for an hour, the second speaker went for an hour and a half, and the first speaker had a 30-minute rebuttal. So the whole thing lasted 3 hours each time. Seven debates, 21 hours of that, and they took turns starting. So you had to make your points in a variety of ways for the variety of people who were listening. And I do have one here that I think illustrates pretty well Lincoln's dry wit and his appeal to people who knew hard times and lived in the country. He was making fun of Douglas's position, which was very difficult for Douglas to arrive at, about whether to support the Buchanan administration, that is, his own Democratic Party, and the Democratic pro-slavery constitution that had been passed in Kansas. And Douglas went back and forth, and he was against it for the most part, but he was still in favor of letting people in the territories decide themselves whether they wanted slavery or not. And this was his policy of popular sovereignty. And Lincoln said that this position was so thin that it was like homeopathic soup from the shadow of a boiled pigeon that had starved to death. That's a good visual image.
Yeah.
And it's got just the right combination of implausible and plausible words in it, that it got a real good laugh, and it really embarrassed Douglas to have your political position compared to homeopathic soup from a shadow.
So he recognized immediately that Lincoln was poking fun at him.
Oh, yeah. They did not like one another personally. They never had, and yet they had to respect one another. I think that's the same now as it always has been amongst rival politicians. But Lincoln was able to poke fun at Douglas in a way that Douglas never could. He just didn't have that gift. He wasn't a humorous fellow. He was a brilliant debater and obviously a brilliant keeper and holder of positions that were politically difficult, but that's how you get to be a long-term senator.
Aside from the debates, do you have any other examples of Lincoln's use of humor, either in poking fun at people or being critical as well?
Well, there's a good case in which he didn't even have to speak. he had a rival named Colonel Dick Taylor, who was campaigning for the Democratic candidate. This was on a tour through southern Illinois in 1840. Lincoln was campaigning for the Whig candidate, and Taylor was standing up on the platform criticizing the Whigs for being the party of the big money, the party of the corporate interests, and the party pushing for the big Eastern banks to have more influence out here on the prairie. Well, while he was criticizing the Whigs as being the rich man's party, Lincoln snuck up behind him from his chair and pulled aside Colonel Taylor's coat to reveal that Colonel Taylor was wearing a satin vest and a gold watch with a gold watch chain. This caused Colonel Taylor a great deal of embarrassment and a lot of good laughs from the crowd. It was not Lincoln's fortune that his candidate won that election, but Taylor's career was more or less done about that point, and Lincoln's went on pretty well.
Anyone today reading word for word, I assume direct quotes, from some of the stories and the jokes that Lincoln told in his time, would they strike people today as being funny?
Most of them would, yeah. That one maybe is a little more fancy in its wording, but most of the jokes that have been recorded in Paul Zoll's book or in other places, and going back to 1863, that's the first time that a book appeared supposedly quoting a lot of Lincoln's jokes and tall tales, are very pithy, and they're pretty raunchy in some cases, or they're just down-home sort of country humor that we can still appreciate.
Was he good at retelling stories, embellishing them, or was he good at telling original stories like a stand-up comedian?
Well, Rich, we don't exactly know. We have to assume that he was trading around humor that he heard in one town to the people in the next town. That's the way jokes circulate. The only example we have of a joke that he wrote down is known as the Bass Ackwards joke, and it's in the museum right now. You can go and see the original and also read the transcript. And he was asked by a court official, we think here in Sangamon County, to write it down because this guy had heard him telling it before some trial, and he thought it was so funny he wanted Lincoln to write it down. So he did. We have no idea if this was something Lincoln had invented himself or if he'd heard it, or if it was something that a whole bunch of different lawyers together had put together. It's this long series of wordplay, but it's a combination of spoonerisms and wordplay and raunchy humor, poking fun at country bumpkins, really. So I sort of doubt that he wrote it himself. I think that some of the humor they came up with was the modern-day stuff we call the poetry slam. Or it was a kind of a prairie version of a pass the sentence around in a circle and see who can continue it in another stupid way that keeps the story going. I think that's how he spent a lot of his time on the circuit, traveling around central Illinois, just telling tales individually and in groups, and winnowing down the best ones to pass on to the people in the next town.
James Cornelius, curator of the Lincoln Collection at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield. Paul Zoll is the author of Abe Lincoln Laughing, a collection of humorous anecdotes from what he characterizes as original sources by and about Lincoln. Now 86 years old, Zoll was born and raised in Lowell, Massachusetts, and as a boy growing up, heard lots of stories about Lincoln, and it wasn't long before he began to question their authenticity.
I came to the realization that none of these stories were original with Lincoln, and then I decided that I would trace them. And that was a mistake, because for the last 60 years, I've been going through old newspapers, old magazines, looking for the sources of Lincoln's humor. And that resulted eventually in a book called Abe Lincoln Laughing, and recently made over as Lincoln's Legacy of Laughter, the main point of which is that he was less interested in originality than in familiarity. That is to say, he used jokes, stories particularly, only when they were familiar to his audience. What that means, of course, is that he's going to change every time he tells the story because his audience changes. Why couldn't I see that at the beginning? Because I'm dumb. Well, this led, of course, to even further research. If Lincoln did not tell these originally, if he got them from newspapers and lectures, and especially from newspapers, which would run these little stories as though they were Western stories. And in this way, Lincoln created the myth by which he was appreciated, because the stock story in the newspapers, particularly one called Spirit of the Times, which was published in New York, but the stories were submitted by people all over the country. And these stories consisted pretty much of the type that we associate with Davy Crockett. And eventually, Lincoln looked like Davy Crockett. He sounded like Davy Crockett. He walked like Davy Crockett, at least to the readers of the newspapers, who looked forward to Lincoln as a great, not imitated necessarily, but as another Davy Crockett. In fact, the Whig Party sent him to New York City in search of more voters, and they advertised him as another Davy Crockett. And the people in New York City were disappointed when he showed up, and he talked beautifully. Well, he talked with a Western accent, what they called a Western accent, Middle Western to us. And when he didn't tell them any stories, they were very disappointed. But they all remarked on the logic of his lectures that he gave. And in this way, he was known, at least among the Northeastern Whigs, as something. At that time, of course, he was a congressman, the only Whig congressman from that particular area of Springfield, and he would rack up the Congress just as he had the state legislature. In fact, somewhere in my notes, I have a description of the reaction of the state legislature to Lincoln's speech. In fact, it wasn't even a speech. He just was responding to one of the other legislators and responded not so much in words as in gestures. And here's the reaction of his fellow legislators. They laughed, screamed, yelled, pounded on the desk, thumped canes on the floor, clapped their hands, threw their hats in the air until the sides ached. Tears ran down their cheeks, and then there came a lull, and then an outburst again, and the doorkeeper tried his best to stop them. Well, this is an eyewitness report. So it's not the kind of canned history. This is right from the manuscript.
Is it fair to characterize or say that your research has shown that Lincoln excelled better at retelling stories than originating stories?
Oh, absolutely.
And in that sense, was Abraham Lincoln a funny man?
Naturally funny, yes. An example would be, everybody knows the Gettysburg Address, but not everybody knows that Lincoln wrote a poem about the Battle of Gettysburg, because it is typical of Lincoln's private note-taking. In 1863, with pomp and mighty swell, me and Jeff's Confederacy went forth to sack Philadelphia. the Yankees, they got after us and give us particular hell, and we skedaddled back again and didn't sack Philadelphia. That proves that every doggerel has its day.
Mm.
But this is the kind of thing he would do in private, you see.
Now, I have been told that the nature of the language, the nature of the sense of the stories and jokes that Abraham Lincoln told in his time would be so far off color that it would not necessarily be acceptable in today's society. And is that an accurate, fair statement?
I can't think of anything that would not be acceptable in today's society of that nature. I think what people are thinking of is, my favorite is the little boy comes running to his father in the house, the farmhouse, and says, "Dad, Pa, Pa, Sis and the hired man are out in the hayloft, and he's taking down his pants, and she's lifting up her skirt and about to pee all over the hay." "Well," says the father, "you got your facts straight, but you're drawing the wrong conclusion." Now, Lincoln is supposed to have told that in a very famous trial. I've never been able to run it down, but it still makes a good Lincoln story. And that's about the extent. He did tell stories about how he met Mary Lincoln, Mary Todd, in an outhouse. Well, I never believed that until I went to the Lincoln home in Springfield and saw that the outhouse was really a two-holer. So it's possible he did. So sometimes those stories, those off-color stories, I think they would be acceptable in today's society.
Well, was he in any way a kind of like a stand-up comedian in his day?
He was early on in Congress, in the state legislature in Congress, and if he had the audience, he would put on the act. For example, at the famous Cooper Union in New York, when he stood up to make one of his really serious breakthrough speeches because he had an international audience. He had a pencil behind his ear, you know, the old hayseed type of thing. His suit was a little rumpled because, now, I'm sure he could have pressed a suit. He was a very well-to-do lawyer, so it wasn't a question of poverty so much as a question of perhaps absent-mindedness, but I suspect it's part of the act.
Paul Zoll, Professor Emeritus of American Studies at California State University, now a research scholar at the